Welcome to Seeking Delphi, episode number 60, Investing in AI and AI in Investing, with Jim Lee. I'm Mark Sackler. The future lives here. The hopes and fears of an AI future are in the news, it seems, every single day. No place is this more evident than the world of Wall Street, where investment in artificial intelligence has grown exponentially in just the past 2 years. But the use of AI to make and even to execute investment decisions has been around a lot longer, and it's getting ever more sophisticated. A familiar voice on Seeking Delphi, financial futurist Jim Lee, joined me recently to discuss the state of these issues. Let's hear what he had to say. Once again, it's a pleasure to have my APF and University of Houston Foresight alum colleague, Jim Lee, on Seeking Delphi. Welcome.
Always great to talk to you. Yeah.
So, Jim, we have talked in the past about just tech investing for the future. That was one of the first podcasts I did back in 2017. You were on to talk about the effect of COVID on investing and finance and whatever. That was about, though, 3 or 4 years ago, I guess, post-COVID testing. Well, we're post-COVID, and in fact, all those cases are going down, but we're really hot with the topic of the day, which, of course, is artificial intelligence, and hardly a day goes by, hardly an hour goes by that you don't see news stories about artificial intelligence. Of course, NVIDIA just had strong earnings again. We're going to do this in two parts before we get to talking about investing in artificial intelligence. We're going to talk about using artificial intelligence to invest, to use it as a tool. So I know it has been used in the past. You used it some. Talk about where it sort of has been and what the state of the art is right now.
Sure, sure. So the investment industry has been an early adapter of computers, of algorithmic decision-making, and also of AI. So we've been doing this for some time now, okay? So if you look at the history of using algorithmic decision-making in the investment community, I'd say that probably started back in the 1970s with Vanguard and the rise of passive index investing. We started to see trading bots even at a retail level in the 1990s. Robo-advisors came in around 2008, 2010. So this has been happening for a long, long time. And I would argue that the bots have already taken over. And you can see that mutual fund flows. I mean, 9 out of the 10 largest mutual funds are managed algorithmically at this point.
Interestingly enough, I'm going to interject here. Do I recall that even that flash crash of 1987 was very much computer-driven?
It was. And that's something that I wanted to talk about today is the 1987 flash crash was automated trading at an institutional level, not at a retail level. And as a result of that, they put in some safeguards and guardrails to prevent market crashes from happening. And we haven't really had a major one since at that speed. And that was, I think, negative 28% in a day in 1987. But one of the things that I'm seeing right now is that there's a certain lack of diversity in the signals that are coming out with the AIs more recently. Okay, so I'm seeing a lot of very crowded trades just based on press releases that come out or earnings statements. It's not uncommon to see a stock move 20% the day after its earnings come out as everyone adopts to this new data. Sometimes they overshoot. Sometimes you can actually play against that by buying off of some of those oversold conditions or buying and, you know, selling into an overbought condition.
Yeah, I would certainly argue that that's, again, very kind of a lot of it short-term trading driven. And a lot of it is maybe more algorithmic than pure AI. But as we see AI getting stronger, is it going to become a bigger part even in making some longer-term decisions? Again, if you listen to my podcast with Jerome Glenn, he said, the people trying to regulate AI right now are trying to keep up with this generative AI. And it's like running alongside a race car and trying to keep up. You got to look at where it's going to be down the road and go to that spot. And that would be artificial general intelligence. There's a lot. It's what's happening right now and what can it do, but also down the road.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that the short-term trading was the first to adapt machine learning and AI because computers respond faster than you or I can. And I've actually heard that it's gotten really hard for day traders to keep their edge because the response of your hands on a keyboard isn't going to keep up with a bot, right? On a T1 line, that's not going to happen. I have seen a fair amount of research done on longer term trades, longer term investing done algorithmically using what they call factor analysis. And you'll see a lot of ETFs have been coming out based on this idea. And that is that there's a perfect combination of financial ratios or statistics or qualities that a company could have that could lead to sustained outperformance of the market. Most of the pioneering research on that came out by Fama and French. I think that was the late 1990s. And they've identified five factors that can lead to systematic long-term outperformance. Quality is one, momentum, the small cap effect is another one, growth versus value. And again, this has already been packaged by the ETF industry, so you can trade these factors pretty actively if you want to.
Well, when you're looking longer term, we as futurists are horizon scanning, trying to figure out the next trend or the next shift before it happens. I would wonder if it's going to take artificial general intelligence to be able to do that. And once we get there, then there becomes the problem, when everybody's doing it, does it lose its effectiveness, or is it going to be one AGI versus another AGI and who's got the best AGI?
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm beginning to see some really crowded trades where everyone's doing the same thing at the same time, and that leads to a lot of volatility. And we've started to see that already.
Yeah, I'm curious, and again, this kind of overlaps with this already with the second part of this story, but we had an unusual event, I would say, when NVIDIA came out with really strong earnings. They went way up and the rest of the market went to pot, which was that you could say, was it buy on the rumor, sell on the news? But they weren't selling on NVIDIA's news. They were selling the rest of the market. What is that, an algorithmic effect, an AI effect, or is it just people being people?
Yeah, I think that's chasing returns, people being people. People do like to buy what's been going up in hopes that it continues to go up. And that's part of the momentum effect that I spoke about earlier. You and I both took a class called Systems Theory at University of Houston, and there's a paradigm or an archetype that goes behind that, and that is success to the successful, and that people tend to put money into what has been working well over the course of the last 3 to 12 months. And we've definitely been seeing that for NVIDIA and a number of other stocks too.
But it seemed like though on Wednesday, money was coming out of everything else that had been working well, except NVIDIA. Were people just selling to get more money to put in NVIDIA, or was it just time to take profits?
Yeah. Well, the market had been going up for, I think, 5 days straight before then. So, you know, some kind of profit taking, I think, was in order. And that's just perfectly normal operations.
I just thought it was kind of strange, was the trading algorithms and the AI working against human emotion, tugging at each other?
I can actually tell you what that algorithm was, right? So I'm a technical analyst by training. That's actually where I started, was writing software for computer trading back when I was a teenager. And you have what are called oscillators, such as Bollinger Bands or relative strength oscillators, RSIs. And what they do is they tell you when the market's being irrational. They tell you when you have these overbought or these oversold conditions, which can, in fact, trigger trades back to the reversion, trades back to the mean.
Yes, I even look at them at times, so I know what they are. So in terms of investing with artificial intelligence, using it, Mm-hmm. You care to speculate what it might be like 3 to 5 years from now when artificial general intelligence, which was the time frame that Jerome Glenn had said he would loosely but not heavily bet on, but if he had to bet, he'd put it in that time frame for AGI. Will we have, you know, different firms using competing AGIs? Will there be an AGI race in the investing world? Are you concerned that makes the analysts like you at StratFi basically obsolete unless you've got your own AGI?
Yeah, right. So I think that we've started to see some of this already, and that there has been a lot of dominance by the large cap companies, you know, the big tech companies. I think part of that is because they have access to bigger, richer data sets, okay? So when you have better data, you make better decisions, and you can use that to your advantage. And that's what they've been doing, and they've been very hard to beat over the course of the last 2 or 3 years.
And we won't even speculate about artificial super intelligence if we ever get that, because they're going to push us aside and the bots are going to own everything.
Well, that's sort of one discussion that's happening right now in Wall Street, is people have kind of moved past the AI trade, and now they're trying to figure out how to power the whole thing. And the strongest trade this year, believe it or not, has been the utility sector, has led the technology sector, because, you know, this stuff is expensive to run, and you got to power it somehow.
That's interesting. And being the stage of life I'm in, I have utility in my portfolio for income, but they've been going up too.
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the final answer is we nobody really knows exactly how fast or exactly in what ways artificial intelligence is going to change the world, so to speak. We only have our scenarios as futurists. Let's talk about how you use algorithms and AI. You've been doing that in your StratFi investing for a while now.
Yeah. So it's really changed everything for me. And I like to say that if you want to be in the right place at the right time, it's helpful to show up a little bit early. And as a futurist, sometimes you get to do that. So I was all over this AI and automation phase 2 years ago in my business, when one, I started using machine learning to optimize the signals that I use to anticipate movements in the market on a daily basis up to 5 years in advance, which was a real breakthrough for me. And that is putting together, you know, a multi-factor model to create a daily score, an estimated probability that the market would go up or down any given day. And that actually enabled me to put together a trading calendar that I give to my staff at the beginning of the year. And then I walk away for the next 12 months while they make all the trades. And it's worked out pretty well. It's worked out well. But more importantly, in the back office, I've used a lot of automation to automate trading, account monitoring, onboarding, reporting for client accounts, which has really enabled me to leverage my time as a portfolio manager.
Now, if we can just get that automation to mix a drink for us while we sit back and look at the results.
Well, that was perfect. Actually, my worst investment was a Chinese company called Luckin Coffee, which 2 or 3 years ago during COVID, I thought this was great. This was a coffee shop for people who didn't like people. And it was all robotic automated coffee. And it ended up being kind of a disaster, and I got out of it alive. So hopefully we'll figure out how to do this at some point.
Let's talk about actually investing in artificial intelligence. A lot of major players out there think that big money has been made, and yet the potential for the growth is still huge. So it's valuations versus potential growth. But tell us where, if any place, you think the right place to be is now in terms of investing in AI over the next, let's keep it a shorter frame, 1 to 3 years.
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's going to be hard to avoid AI. It already is, just in conversations. And it's going to be like technology. You're going to have technology in everything. You're going to have AI in everything. And right now, the focus has been on the chip manufacturers coming up with the hardware. The software is got a lot of Microsoft and OpenAI, and OpenAI is partially owned by Microsoft at this point. So that's probably the most direct way of getting access to that. But it will be in everything, and it will, I think, increase productivity substantially. It will make small businesses more efficient, and it will make bigger businesses harder to beat, again, because they have the big data sets.
So are there any particular industries out there that still have some value left, maybe, that are going to benefit from using AI, so you're not directly investing in the makers and producers of the AI, the hardware and software, but the companies that are most going to value, most going to benefit from using it?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say healthcare is a rich opportunity set. And you and I have spoken together about longevity therapies. And there are a lot of big puzzles involved in what goes into longevity or what goes into, pharmaceutical drug development. And one of the things that I find really fascinating is this idea of testing new pharmaceutical compounds in silico, right? So in the beginning, it was in vivo, in live test, live test subjects. And then you did it sort of in the Petri dish, as it were. And now you're doing it all in simulations. And the same physics simulations that are being used for engineering are now being used at a micro level by the drug industry to test drugs for safety and effectiveness before they're even released. And that's going to be pretty fascinating.
Well, I actually have some personal experience with that. Of course, I sold laboratory equipment, physical testing equipment, into pharmaceutical companies, and we sold equipment for in vitro dissolution testing, a better mousetrap test, which is simply testing how the solid dosage form active ingredient dissolves over time. But I also went to, back, you talked about longevity in 2019, I attended a workshop at the XPRIZE out in Culver City, California, right, with Peter Diamandis and the like, but Aubrey de Grey was there, Sergey Young, who was the kind of the push behind a longevity, an idea for a longevity XPRIZE, actually sat at the same table with me for 2 days, and we came up with, for our proposal at our table, and it's all these years later, they finally come up with a longevity XPRIZE, and they're calling it a lifespan extension. For whatever reason, that's what they could get sponsors for. But the proposal that I had, and there was another table, by the way, that was chaired by a guy who was a biotech investor. We both kind of came up with the same idea of, testing compounds in silico to cut the development time down. You're still going to have to do the human trials, but just getting to the human trials can take years. And we test out things like dissolution and absorption and the like, stability in vitro, to the extent that you can get a heads up on efficacy in vitro first would save huge amounts of time, and every day of time saved in the drug development process, you're talking seven-figure savings in the development costs. So maybe we can get better drugs quicker and hopefully cheaper.
Yeah.
And convince the pharmaceutical companies to pass that savings on to the ultimate consumer. So really, right now, if I wanted to invest in artificial intelligence, what would you recommend? Too late for NVIDIA, it's overpriced, even though it's great.
Yeah, NVIDIA is a great stock, but if you look at what happens next for AI, it is going into robotics and automation, and they're very well positioned for that. So I certainly would not bet against NVIDIA. I would certainly look at buying the dips on that. I think Microsoft is a very interesting play. I think Google actually had a head start on AI. but didn't make it public because they didn't want to cannibalize their search business, right?
And now they have to. Now they have to.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah, now they have to.
Yeah, they have to.
What about quantum computing, which obviously you would think might have the potential to basically quantum computing with AI? Does that put AI on steroids, so to speak? And is that something to potentially, it's still very early in terms of investment opportunities in quantum computing. And you had to wait a long time. If you were patient, you could have turned thousands of dollars into millions in AI. Quantum computing might be the same thing. But if you have any thoughts on that, if you've looked at it, that's going to play out over a few more years, but it is progressing quickly, I think, in terms of qubits and the like.
It is progressing very quickly. There's no one really doing it profitably at this point because no one's doing it at scale. It's one of those stocks where I think it makes a good speculation, but kind of a lousy investment. In other words, you can get in and out of it a bunch of times, but you can't buy it and hold it yet until they have positive cash flow. The one that I've been watching is IonQ. IONQ, which does room temperature quantum computing, which is really interesting. They've had some staff changes, which kind of gives me pause. But that's a pure play, still a small cap stock. If you want to trade it, that would be one where I would start.
There's actually an ETF also, if I'm not mistaken.
Can you use those ETFs as shopping lists to figure out, you know, the angle that you want to take. And a lot of these kind of boomed last year and they've faded a little bit as people have moved on, specifically in the quantum computing area.
Can you think of anything else we should be covering here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think you need to look at cybersecurity, and CrowdStrike is a natural choice in that, in terms of using AI to identify threats before, you know, they're really recognized. And they're getting huge market share relative to Palo Alto and, you know, some of the other ones.
In fact, it's interesting. I mentioned quantum computing because yesterday I started a small speculative portfolio, a tiny piece of my portfolio in quantum computing. At least one of the companies was actually focusing on cybersecurity and quantum computing, quantum encryption, and quantum computing is going to make it harder. So you may have to use quantum computing to fight it, so to speak.
Well, another sort of beneficiary of quantum computing and AI, I think, is going to be cryptocurrencies. Something that I've been talking about is this idea that we may have a dual currency system. One is sort of fiat currency or government currency for discretionary expenditures that you or I might make. And then I believe that you will have cryptocurrencies such as Ethereum and Bitcoin used for smart contract purchases done on the Internet of Things. And that will all be automated as well. And I would expect cryptos, the regulatory environment has changed quite a bit in the last week. I don't think they're done yet. I think they're heading in the right direction. We still have a long ways to go. But Coinbase in the U.S. is, you know, really becoming the dominant player at this point, and they're serving as the custodian for most of these spot crypto ETFs that have been coming out.
Interesting. And I guess the Ethereum spot ETFs were just approved, correct?
Sort of. Preliminary approval, I think, would be the right way to put that, right? Because there's still a few more steps that they need to go through, such as the S1 filings for them to go live, and that could take weeks to months. But I wasn't even quite sure that they would get the preliminary approval, and they did.
It's getting pretty confusing with all these cross currents, actually. Maybe we'll get to the point where we'll each have our own AGI doing our trading for us, and we can just sit on the beach with a margarita.
They'll be the best. Back in the day, we had, you know, secretaries and staff and receptionists to be the gatekeepers. And at some point, I think the algorithm is going to be the gatekeeper. And we've seen that within advertising already and marketing, where Google's algorithm is the gatekeeper, and they will decide whether you're seen or not seen. Within the investment industry, you have gatekeepers like Zacks and Morningstar, and they will tell you whether these investments will reach people's screens or not. And in the future, you and I will have personal gatekeepers that will be in AI, tell us whether we should read this email message or whether it's spam. That's already started.
Well, then we got to start getting into the whole notion of digital twins, which could be our own personal, again, our own personal AGI. And I did actually get a podcast on digital twins, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, some of these things sound hot and then you don't hear about them, but all of a sudden, I think they're becoming more likely again. So I guess we'll see. Well, Jim, it has been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you.
As AI advances at an ever more mind-boggling pace, one wonders if the day will come when no human being will be able to be pure AI working by itself in the investment world. That brings us to the subject of our next program, which will explore maintaining a human collaborative approach to artificial intelligence, both in its design and use. Thanks for joining me. My technical assistant is Mohammed Barous. Until next time, I'm Mark Sackler.